Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
It's David Noble filling in for Aaron Flint here on the show. I'm very excited for this 9 o'clock hour because we have got Congressman Troy Downing from Montana's Eastern District joining us live on the show. If you want to get a message in, you can call in and talk to the producer. He'll get the message to me, 406-294-0970. Send it to us on the Montana Talks app, and we'll get it to Congressman Downing. Well, first off, Congressman Downing, first thing I want to say, Congressman Downing, is huge congratulations on the endorsement from President Trump. I read that live on the air here just the other day.
Wow. Yeah. Thanks. We were really pleased to see that. It came without any forewarning. And I don't know if you saw this, but I was one of the first endorsements this cycle, 4 or 5 months ago. And he just doubled down a couple of days ago. So we were, very, very flattered. We've been obviously working really closely with the administration and, happy to get that.
Well, it's always good to see the president supporting you in office. So I've got some questions for you. I guess we'll start out with what have you been working on there in Congress recently?
Well, it's funny. Everybody says that you're not doing floor votes, so you must be on vacation. But that can't be farther from the truth. We've been traveling through district as much as possible. I'm actually in D.C. right now. I've been meeting with some stakeholders out here, folks in the ag lending industry were in my office yesterday, just talking about all the issues with agriculture. You were still doing our policy work. I got, during the shutdown, I've gotten, bills of my own into the hopper. Obviously, we're not debating them in committee yet, but we're still doing all that policy work. But, one of the things that that has been really important and has been a great opportunity with the kind of change here in D.C. is I've been able to really spend some time out in district. And with everything going on in agriculture, making sure that I'm showing up at, farms and ranches and talking to folks that are, being impacted by, markets, by trade, by obviously the news that came out about importing Argentine beef. But, there's been a lot of concerns, and just making sure that I'm talking to the producers on the ground so that I can carry those voices to the administration as the administration navigates these issues.
Well, I very much appreciate that. It's funny to hear you say that. I don't know if you know this. I was in Argentina on vacation here for a couple of weeks while the news broke related to this importing of Argentine beef. I want to follow up with Congressman Downing on that issue and kind of where that stands. I've been talking to some ranchers who have been basically kind of saying it doesn't seem to be as big of a problem as people might, think on first blush, just because of the type of beef that gets imported. It's used for burgers. They don't have the same type of grain finishing down there, the marbling that we do, all of these different things. But I'm sure the Congressman Downing has a more of an update from us on that. But I was down there in Argentina eating Argentina steaks when that news broke, and I saw Congressman Downing come out against it. So we'll follow up more with Congressman Downing right after this.
But calling America.
War Secretary Pete Hegseth finished his trip through Asia by speaking with U.S. troops stationed in South Korea, thanking them for honoring the commitment America's military has had there for over 70 years.
Your forefathers were on this same peninsula defending this same alliance.
The secretary also gave the troops credit for what they represent, especially with the threat of North Korea so close.
There is no deterrence without all of you. I'm looking in the eyes of deterrence, the faces and the families of deterrence, of the sacrifice that's required to keep us free.
Hegseth also saying that the troops make the president's policy goals a reality.
You can talk about peace through strength, but you got to have somebody that does the strength part. We're the strength department. You're the strength department.
Kevin Uretsky, Fox News.
Montana Talks, where you get the mic. Call in now at 406-294-0970. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
It's David Noble. We're talking to Congressman Downing here. Congressman Downing, I don't know if you heard me right before the break there say, I was actually down in Argentina just on vacation eating steaks at Argentine steakhouses when this news broke about the potential importation of beef from Argentina. I guess where's that issue stand right now? What's the latest on that?
Well, first of all, we've been working with the administration on this. When that news first popped out, I was on the phone with them, daily on the concerns that we had, because what the president is trying to do, and, I agree with this, is he's trying to keep food affordable and making sure that in the grocery store people can afford beef. And obviously that's important. And it's important to the industry, too, because if it gets too expensive, people will start choosing other proteins, and they'll start looking at pork. They'll start looking at chicken. They'll look at other proteins, which obviously has a longer term effect. And so the message that I carry to the administration is, yes, we all want to get those prices down. It's just best for the industry. It's best for our consumers. But we need to do that by rebuilding the American herd. And even in Montana, we had about 2.5 million head of cattle at the COVID pandemic. And then we're down to a little over 2.1 million, so about a 400,000 head lost there. And so that's just Montana. But we've seen, this herd size go down across the country for various reasons, from drought to, all these things. But what we need to do is focus on rebuilding that American herd to start affecting those prices, so that our ranchers still have access to market where they're getting a fair price for their product and not, unfairly competing with other countries. And one thing I just want to put, since we're kind of talking about Argentina here, is, there's always other things in the sidelines. And first of all, I want to state that, I'm in Congress to represent my producers. And so the message that I'm taking to the White House is the message coming from my producers to make sure that we're doing the best thing to protect them in the market. But, the president obviously has other things that he's trying to affect here. And I've been, you said you were down in Argentina. I was down there as well. I met with Milei this summer. And one of the things that really stood out to me with Milei is, he is an agent of change down there who is fighting investment from China. And I think that's really important when you look at the geopolitical issues of what's going on in South America, is not having the Chinese investing in yet another South American, country that is, getting them closer to the United States and have more of an effect. And so I think that the president is really concerned that he's supporting Argentina to the point where they don't have to turn to China for investment. And I think that that's one of the things. And the other thing that I just thought was incredibly fascinating is Argentina, going back to the Peronistas, going back, generations, has had, hyperinflation issues. And so there's been this lack of confidence in their currency. And so the other thing that the president did, obviously, is a and it made a lot of news, of course, is a $20 billion currency swap. And so, when people look at that, why are you sending $20 billion to Argentina? That's a mischaracterization. It's basically helping Argentina participate in the global market by having access to some dollars. But the U.S. is getting pesos for that. And in terms of foreign exchanges, there's still opportunity that U.S. makes money on that, while making sure that we're getting stability down there and discouraging them to fall under more Chinese influence.
Well said. Well said. I could comment on so much of that, but I think that was all very well said. But this is Montana Talks, and we are taking messages. So instead of me going off on all of that, and I've got a story here about something specific Milei just did to try to kick the Chinese out, and I've got comments on the rest of that. But let's go to Montana Joe in Billings has a question for Congressman Troy Downing. 80% of Americans want to stop daylight savings time and stop changing our clocks. What is holding Congress up on making the change and getting rid of daylight savings time?
Well, I think the biggest, I'm kind of agnostic on this. I mean, I hate changing my clocks just like everybody else does. But I think the messaging that's keeping that from changing is coming from, northern latitude states where they're worried about their kids going to school in the morning and not having the, you know, sunrise until, you know, 9 a.m. I mean, they're worried about having, you know, kids going to school in the dark and, you know, starting that in the dark. They're worried about, you know, the agricultural community of, you know, they're already starting in the dark, but having prolonged darkness in the mornings. And I think that's really what the response to that has been.
You actually answered the question. The question was, what's holding it up in Congress? And here we have Congressman Troy Downing actually answering the question. We got another one for you, Congressman. Ken in Great Falls says, why won't you have a town hall meeting? I'm waiting for you to come to Great Falls so I can ask you questions.
Well, a couple of things is we've had multiple town hall meetings. We do these. I think we're having our fifth one today. And we get tens of thousands of participants. We get more participants in a town hall than you can fit into the Metra. And
yeah, so I literally just saw your social media post about your upcoming town hall just this morning.
Yeah, and yeah, if anybody participates in these, they'll see that, you know, we get questions, we get the good, the bad, and the ugly. You know, so if you've got the only thing that we're limited by is time. And so if you have important questions and you want to get them out there in a town hall, then that's the best way to do it. We have the, you know, broadest reach. And like I said, we've had tens of thousands of participants in this. And we, you know, we let the questions through, whether they're, you know, softball or difficult ones. We let them through. And if people really want to participate, then I strongly suggest that they go to our website, downing.house.gov, sign up for our newsletter, or look for the information about the town hall. And
hey, we're up against the break, Congressman Downing. We got 5 seconds to the break here. We're going to come right back. Got another message for Congressman Downing. With now.
Tackling the issues that shape our state. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
It's David Noble filling in for Aaron Flint, your favorite guest host. That's Noble with a K. You can find me. I'm working as an attorney here in Billings during the day. You can find me online at LCTRFA. And we're talking to Congressman Troy Downing. And, you know, it's funny, Congressman Downing. Ken in Great Falls, one of our great Democrat listeners. He may not know this, but when I have you on, Congressman Downing, we don't talk about what questions we're going to let through. And you're on the show taking questions from anybody that wants to call in or message in. And you're right. You're doing those town halls all the time. But the mere fact that our Democrat listener, Ken in Great Falls, had a chance to ask you a question. And the question he asked you is, wait, when can I ask you a question?
But you know, here's the thing is I'll give a little bit of grace here. We do respond, and there's lots of ways to reach out to us. I mean, we've got a great constituent service team. You know, we have responded to, you know, so many issues. We've gotten almost $2.7 million. It's 2.6 and change back to constituents that called us with, you know, issues with federal agencies. You know, we do answer questions. We do answer the phone, and we do these town halls. And it's just interesting that people are, you know, shaking their fists about that, because we've been a very approachable and responsive office here. And I just don't know how we could be more efficient.
Well, I agree with you. We got a message from Fred in the Flathead. Fred in the Flathead says, if we're going to allow Chinese Brazil beef, we need to allow Argentina beef, maybe even favor Argentina over Brazil. I guess that's Congressman Downey, one thing I've sort of been hearing, and I think this is sort of backed up by the data, is we really only import sort of low quality beef, you know, 10%. 10% of the beef market in the U.S. is imports. It's mostly used for burger, low quality. I mean, we're not importing USDA prime steaks, you know, from anywhere in the world for that matter. And so I don't know how big of a threat this really is. I think what you were saying, Congressman Downing, about, you know, making sure consumer preferences don't change as a result of this guy. I mean, you go to Costco now and you get a 4-pack of steaks at Costco and it could be $100. I mean, it's really gotten crazy.
Yeah, no, it has. And just to kind of piggyback on what you just said, you know, the majority of the beef brought in is frozen laden trim. And obviously, we grow fat cows in Montana. We've got a lot of fat trim. And so a lot of that frozen lean is blended with our fat here to, you know, make a lot of that burger. And so it's not a direct competitor. If you are buying a prime steak in a steakhouse, if you're buying a prime steak, that's an American steak right there. And so it is a part of the market, but it's not that prime, you know, it's not that that steakhouse steak that, you know, that we're known around the world for. But still, with that in mind, I think that the answer that we need to continue to pursue with the administration is that our biggest ability to support our ranchers and to get prices down for the consumers is to just regrow the American herd.
Here's a good message, one from Grandpa Lou in Billings. He says, Congressman Downing, stay in the fight. Keep doing a good job. I'm glad I voted for you.
Well, thank you, Lou. I appreciate it.
And another one we've got here from Perry in Columbus. Perry in Columbus says, this is actually one I'm really interested to hear your take on, Congressman. Perry in Columbus says, the big meat processors have a virtual monopoly over the market. What would Congressman Downing be willing to do to break up the meat processor monopoly and get localized production and distribution?
Well, and that is the $20,000 question right there, and how we deal with that. And I think to the extent that there's, you know, antitrust issues, that there is, you know, any kind of collaboration, that's obviously things that we need to look at, you know, carefully. And I don't know if you've had the chance to look at the new program that Secretary Rollins just released from the USDA on, you know, dealing with a lot of the beef issues. And part of that is expanding smaller local processing. And so, you know, there's been fits and spurts in trying to do that in the past. And, you know, a lot of it is competing with economies of scale. But we need to solve that problem to make sure that we have local. And some of the stuff that we're looking at, you know, like the Prime Act, which allows local processing to sell directly to local, you know, restaurants and grocery stores. I think that is an awesome opportunity there. But we need to find a way of making sure that it doesn't become a monopoly issue, that we don't have, you know, Sherman Act issues there, and that we are supporting, you know, the producers. And as I've said to the administration, you know, multiple times, you know, we don't have big packing houses in Montana. We have producers, and I'm there to make sure that I'm elevating the voice of the producers, because that's what matters in my district.
You know, a big topic here in Montana, of course, is the food stamp program, the government shutdown. I mean, from a lot of, you know, conservative perspective, the big news story here is the mere fact that there's 42 million people on food stamps in this country, and then how many of those are going to, you know, illegal immigrant headed households, foreign born households, things like that. And that's been the real shock to a lot of us, Congressman Downing, is just the sheer number. And then you look at the graph of the spending on that, and it went massively, massively up during the Biden administration. So no surprise on that. So I guess what's your position on the food stamp thing? I mean, I just throwing it out there, my perspective is that type of a program is a good program if it's done at the state level or lower. I mean, I'm a lawyer. I've read the Constitution. There's nothing in Article 1, Section 8 that says the federal government should be paying for people's food. That's a state level issue. So I don't really see a role for the federal government in that, even though I do think it's appropriate for the states to take care of the neediest of the needy. But the fact is that with 42 million people on a federal food stamp program, that's reaching more than just the neediest of the needy. So I guess what's your policy position on that issue?
Well, first of all, I think that, you know, one of the things that you kind of alluded to there is for those who qualify for this, who absolutely need this, I think it's important that we support that. But I think what we've seen, especially, you know, this last year with all of the digging into, you know, the Doge team and everything else digging into, you know, federal abuses, I think that we've seen a lot of fraud, waste, and abuse in that system. And it is shocking to see how widespread that is. And some of the stuff that I think is going to help is, you know, at least on the SNAP side, is, you know, having, you know, work requirements for able-bodied, you know, making sure that we're starting to get people so that they are, we give them a path to help themselves. And that way, you know, not only do you start to have more, you know, self pride in actually getting out and doing something, but that, you know, gives a requirement for doing this, because we want, I think, you know, the basic thing is you can't call yourself a society if you don't help those who cannot help themselves. But we are under no obligation to help those who do not help themselves. And that distinction is incredibly important. But it is concerning to see how widespread that is. And we do need to rein that in. And I mean, I think that there's a lot of focus and energy on doing that in Congress right now.
Yeah, and you mentioned work requirements, and it's similar to the sort of policy debate you had over Medicaid. And it's like, look, if you want your neighbor to pay for your health insurance or your food or something, the least you can do is at least be looking for, especially if you're able-bodied, working age person. Yeah, I mean, yeah. that's who we're talking about here with the Medicaid expansion debate. But then Congressman Downey, it's not even that you have to actually go out and work 20 hours. You can volunteer. And you talk about, you know, benefiting people emotionally. I mean, if you're down on your luck, if you're struggling, if you're on food stamps and on Medicaid and all of these things and you can't find a job, going out and volunteering for 15 to 20 hours, 25 hours a week, you're going to feel much better about yourself, and that's going to help you in addition to help the people you're volunteering for.
I don't disagree with that. And just one thing that I want to, kind of point out with this whole conversation, especially on the Medicaid side with the work requirements, is there's a lot of folks who, you know, keep, you know, shaking their fists saying that we're kicking everybody off of their health plans or off of their entitlements there. And, you know, that's not the case at all, because with the work requirements is at least in terms of the Medicaid side, the work requirements are for able-bodied without dependents. And so I get folks saying, well, you know, I'm, you know, raising a, you know, 5-year-old and I don't have the time to do it. So there are these exemptions for folks that can't do that. And as you mentioned, there are other opportunities for people who are saying, well, there's just no work in my community, so what am I supposed to do? You can do community service. There's all these things out there. And to the extent that folks know that there are these ways to stay on if they are entitled to these benefits. And that's an important part, too, because we've clearly had folks that have been taking benefits that were not entitled and didn't actually need them. But all those exemptions are there for people that have a situation that doesn't allow them to meet that standard to still stay on benefits if they qualify for them. So the whole message that we're just kicking everybody off that, you know, needs these programs is just unfounded and untrue. If you qualify for the program last year, you're going to qualify it. You're going to continue to qualify for it. The only difference is if you're able-bodied without dependents, is there's going to be, you know, a requirement for you to actually get out of the house.
Yeah, so we're talking about able-bodied working age people without any dependents and without kids or without maybe an elderly person you're taking care of. Those people should be volunteering or working in order to get that. But Congressman Downing, I mean, if we're going to talk about Medicaid and some of this stuff, I mean, we might as well talk about the fact that Obamacare, it really has failed. And we're about to go to a break here, Congressman Downing, so we'll get your take on this after this break. But my big point is that conservatives and Republicans, we do have ways to fix the out of control cost for health insurance and health premium. There are plans to fix that. And the fact of the matter is this was caused by Obamacare. And then the other thing is that these Democrats are the ones that shut down the government. Now they're the ones protesting the fact that SNAP is not being paid out. It really puts you, like, makes you kind of feel like you might be crazy. But we don't have any messages or questions for the congressman right now, folks. So if you want to call in or message in, we'll get your message to the congressman here during the 9 o'clock statewide hour, 406-294-0970, or the Montana Talks app. We'll be right back with more from Congressman Troy Downey.
This is where Montana Talks at with Lane Nordland.
While drought has decimated the size of the U.S. cattle herd, it's the consumer that continues to demand high-quality beef. That was the message that Cattle Facts' Randy Block shared with me last week at Angus Convention in Kansas City.
We don't need to apologize for these high prices. We've never enjoyed a run like this. We've never enjoyed this kind of profitability across the industry. Most of that has come based on the growth in beef demand. It's been producing a much higher quality product that is driving the growth in beef demand. Beef demand's at a 40-year high. What that means to each and every one of you as producers out there is, had demand needle not moved where it is to today, cattle would be, if we had the same demand that we had in 1998, cattle would be selling $1,000 lower than they are today. $1,000. That's a big number. So hopefully that gives everybody a perspective of what we're talking about from demand growth, and obviously that's what's driving profitability.
Block emphasized that ranchers' dedication to producing high-quality cattle and using high-quality genetics to have high-end beef has created the consumer demand we are seeing today for the protein-rich product. I'm Lee Northland.
Thank you.
Talking about the issues that matter to Montana statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
It's David Noble filling in. Let me switch back over to program there so I don't get feedback. It sounds like, I guess, I'm no Aaron Flint. I'll put that out there. I'm no Aaron Flint. I actually had Congressman Downing's office message me beforehand that he was only available until 9:30 because of a pre-existing meeting. I thought we had all hour just because, again, I'm no Aaron Flint. But we may be, have a chance to get Congressman Downing back on in the meantime. Feel free to send in messages to me. I do see the one from Okotoks and Laurel and Josh in the Flathead. If we can get Congressman Downing back on, I will definitely read those out to him and get his take on it. Meanwhile, I wanted to continue going. Aaron Flint, apparently while on vacation, is still tweeting. One thing he tweeted out was a retweet by our friend Alex Brusewitz. He says, hey, mainstream media, let's cool it on this. Zohran Mamdani is a generational talent hype. He isn't close to being a generational talent. He performed substantially worse than even Bill de Blasio did, laughing out loud. Peddling communism and free everything promises is a cakewalk in a deep blue stronghold riddled with sky-high poverty, courtesy of decades of failed Democrat policies and politicians. Sadly, the gullible voters who bought into his shtick are in for a rude awakening. Under his watch, conditions will only deteriorate further. Poverty will skyrocket. But that's not my problem. Good luck, New York City. Great little post there by Alex Brusewitz that Aaron Flint tweeted out. Aaron Flint also tweeted out, apparently this is his analysis. Aaron says, hopefully this kicks conservative voters in the butt to turn out in the midterms. Too many people sitting back saying it's okay, Trump's got this. Yeah, but he needs an army at his side and too much GOP infighting. And I agree with that take by Aaron Flint. Aaron Flint also retweeting Jake Eaton's post about me and him covering down for those first couple of hours. So appreciate the retweet there. But had to get the Aaron Flint takes out to our listeners, and so I appreciate Aaron Flint continuing to tweet while he's on vacation. Congressman Downing had actually posted a couple days ago about how we're now tied for the longest shutdown in the U.S. history, 35 days. Congressman Downing had said it's unconscionable that the Democrats have let it go on this long. Montana's projected to have lost $177 million in revenue. 14,000 federal workers are furloughed or unpaid. Small businesses face $12 million in delayed loans. It's time to open the government. That was Congressman Downing posting on Facebook just the other day. I'm going to see if I can go back to Congressman Downing. I'm asking the producer, is he available quite yet? Not quite yet, but okay.
Here,
sounds like we may have a lucky chance of getting him back on. Donald Trump is out there really going in all on the okay, yeah, we're good. All right, Congressman Downing, do I have you there?
Sorry about that. I'm in my D.C. office, and we've had some meetings, and some got shuffled around, but we're back here for a couple more minutes, so thanks for continuing.
Yeah, no, thank you for coming back on. I mean, I guess there's a couple of things. I don't know if you heard what I was just talking about. I was reading your Facebook post about the impact here in Montana of the shutdown and the impact on Montana. Of course, I was also talking about how Republicans do have policies to fix our health care and health insurance. The fact that Obamacare health insurance premiums are sky high is a huge issue. I've got a couple of messages here from our listeners as well. But I guess, Congressman Downing, if you want to address a couple of those topics, I'll let you right now.
Well, first of all, yes, I agree with your characterization that, the Affordable Care Act, that Obamacare has been a problem. And what we've seen from the beginning of this is, first of all, this was put on the American people by the Democrats. This was obviously not a Republican policy when Obamacare first hit. And it was sold to Americans that your premiums were going to go down, that you could stay on your plan, that you could keep your doctor. And I'm going to tell you that nothing has been a bigger contributor to rising health care and health insurance costs than the Affordable Care Act. And what's happened over time is initially when the program first started, I saw my premiums nearly triple, those first parts of, because I was in the individual market, was paying for insurance for myself and my family. And what happens when you have rising prices in insurance and in health insurance is some people will start to make the determination on, is this worth it? Is this worth it to me? And so some people will make the decision to not actually purchase the insurance. And the people most likely to not purchase the insurance are the people who least need it. So young, healthy, athletic, those are the folks that start coming off the program. And so as you start to lose healthy people, it concentrates the risk, and that starts to put the premiums higher. It's called adverse selection. And as the premiums go higher, more healthy people come off, and the risk pool gets more risky, and the expenses get higher. And so you start this spiral. And so one of the things that has happened, obviously, the enhanced premium tax credits, the Obamacare credits.
Can I jump in right there? Because I just want to, before you go on, because I think you're making a very good point here. And I, literally just this morning, I was talking to numerous friends and colleagues here in Montana. And a lot of us that are business owners and things like that, that we're having to provide our own health insurance out of pocket, we've been using the Obamacare marketplace. But a lot of us are just thinking about next year. Maybe we just don't have any insurance at all. Maybe we do one of these, Christian Health Sharing Ministries, Samaritan, all these different programs out there that are not these. So it sounds to me like what you're saying is one of the reasons these premiums are going up is because younger, healthier people are just opting out entirely. And if that's kind of what you're saying, to me, just my personal experience, that problem is just going to get worse and worse and worse.
Yeah. And that's part of the problem. The other problem is just inflationary. I mean, the cost of health care has gone up. So there's been inflationary factors. And then one of the big drivers and costs that continues to go up is the cost of drugs, the pharmaceutical costs in terms of of health plans covering that. Those are going up. So you've got this perfect storm that's contributing to rising prices. And as you do that, you'll continue to see this adverse selection. And so I think what a lot of the Democrats are pushing for here is they see that their landmark legislation, their biggest thing that they've accomplished in the last couple of decades is the emperor's got no clothes, and they don't want people to see the naked emperor. And so they're trying to find these other subsidies to hide the fact that it's getting more and more expensive. And here's where the Republicans are on this, is most of us, me included, are not willing to have the federal government write a blank check to put up a smokescreen to hide a failed system. We actually need to get people at the table to start talking about all these things that are driving the costs up. We need to talk about the structural issues with the system rather than writing a blank check to keep hiding the fact that it's failing.
Well said. I mean, the other thing that's just kind of driving me nuts, Congressman Downing, is the fact that the Democrats shut down the government, and now the Democrats, even here in Montana, and we've been laughing and joking about these leftist weirdos in Missoula, they had a quote-unquote die-in. I never even heard of that. I don't necessarily know what it is, but you've got all of these leftist Democrats protesting against the government shutdown, when it's like, aren't the Democrats the reason the government shut down right now?
Well, here's the question that they should be asking is, now, what's it been, 15 times in the Senate? 15 times there's been a vote, and you can vote yes to reopen the government, or you can vote no to keep it closed. And the Democrats continue to vote no. And if they start, you know, yelling and screaming that we're not, you know, willing to, discuss their demands on health care and a bunch of other things, it's a red herring. They could have thrown any issue there because they just didn't want the administration to succeed, and they wanted to confound the Republicans, who are now actually getting some momentum and solving problems that the American people sent us there to solve. And so that's frustrating for them. So they throw this red herring out there. Even the talk about the enhanced premium tax credits that, you know, they keep throwing out there, this is their policy that they wrote to last 2 years. And they had control and could have made it permanent. Then they did an extension for 2 years on that. It expires December 31st of this year because that's the bill that they wrote. And now they're going to hold the American people hostage if we don't, you know, make permanent policy that they intentionally made temporary to deal with the COVID crisis. It's ridiculous. But the vote in front of them, when somebody says this is, you know, Trump shut down or the Republicans shut down, you know, ask those senators that voted yes or no on this resolution, because it's really simple. There's no poison pills in it. There's no policy in it. It's a short extension of current paying of current budget policy for 7 weeks. And obviously that's going to need to be extended now because we've gone so many weeks into this. It's a short term extension of current policy that they wrote, so that we can get back to regular order and start appropriating as we're constitutionally required.
Quick break. Quick break. We'll be right back.
My Pillow is.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
David Noble here filling in for Aaron Flint. We've got Congressman Troy Downing with us. Let me read a couple of messages from you listeners out there, and then we'll get Congressman Downing's response. Okotoks in Laurel says, speaking of the Doge team, does that still exist? I hear nothing about it anymore. Rick in Ronan says, just heard the tail end of the SNAP conversation. Since the Constitution is a document of enumerated powers, what specific power in Article 1, Section 8 authorizes the welfare problems like SNAP? Paul in Billings writes in and says, I'd like to suggest you limit all payments to the legislative bodies in Washington until the government reopens, including secretaries, aides, and all the office staff. Menace and Ennis says, it's banks. Banks control Congress, so no term limits and no executive order to remove the time change. Oh, that must have been about the time change issue. Not sure about the banks and what their position is on that. Joe in Wolf Point says, why are the corporate farm families and Hooterites able to be on SNAP and Medicaid? I pay $700 a month for insurance. Why are we paying for there, and what can be done about this? Question mark. A lot there, Congressman Downing. Your take on some of those.
That was a whole lot of stuff in the last couple of minutes we have here. And I do need to wrap up here because I have my next meeting coming in. But I want to put a bow on something that we were talking about before the break, though. You know, these issues that we've talked about with, you know, the structural integrity of Obamacare, of these premium subsidies, all of this is stuff that we want to talk about. And here's the issue we have with this shutdown is we are being we're being given an ultimatum. It's like, you give us, you know, $1.5 trillion to, you know, deal with all these things that we want, or we keep the government shut down. And that circumvents the process. That circumvents actually debating these in committee and bringing in stakeholders and actually having these conversations to figure out what we can do structurally. Because I'll tell you, me personally, I'm not willing to simply say, yes, whatever's in your giant omnibus here to open the government, I'm not willing to have the American people write a $1.5 trillion check to cover it. We need to actually have those debates.
And Trump won't sign that. And President Trump wouldn't sign that anyway. So, the Democrats need to realize that, too.
Oh, absolutely. But here's the thing is Thune, Leader Thune, has made it really clear to the Democrats that he's willing to put a, you know, enhanced premium tax credit, you know, vote on the floor, do that. But the problem is they don't want it to be debated. They don't want it to be voted on. They want to use it as a ransom note for the American people. And many of us, me included, are not willing to write a $1.5 trillion check because they're playing politics rather than doing policy that actually helps the American people.
Okay, well said. I got it. We got another message from Gina in Hysham. I'm a cattle producer. I think a lot of listeners don't understand how long it takes to grow a mama cow. It takes up to 4 years to fully produce for the herd. In the meantime, all of our costs, insurance, tractors, land, feed are going up. They need to look at the packers and the corporate grocery stores. The cattle producers also can't compete with the out-of-staters not farming the farming land. We're getting old, and that's a problem, too. Thank you for Gina and Heischer. Now, Congressman Downing, I know that those messages, there's a lot of them there. There's a lot of content, certainly not some of the questions that I'd ask you if it was me, but we're on Montana Talks and you're here and you're I very much appreciate you being willing to take some of these messages from our callers and listeners.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah. I need to move on because I got my next meeting coming in here. But we do have our Teletown Hall is coming today at noon. And if anybody wants to, you know, listen to it live, they can go to downing.house.gov/live. Or if they want to actually ask questions, they can at noon today just dial in 855-408-1334, and we can continue answering these kinds of questions and whatever other questions folks have. I'm happy to do it, and hopefully there's folks that have time to, you know, dial in and let us know. Just two things on the questions that you articulated. You know, the DOGE team is not, you know, is not exactly where it was in the beginning, but a lot was uncovered that is now being dealt with, and a lot of that is being codified in law. We got a bunch of it into the one big beautiful bill, and we're going to continue working on that stuff. And from the cattle producer talking about growing mama cows, I hear you. Continue to share your story, and we will continue to relay that to the administration to make sure that we're watching out for our producers. But I need to head off. If people want to be on that call,
You already stayed longer than we thought, so we very much appreciate it, Congressman Downing.
All right. You have a great day.
Thank you. You too. Great to have Congressman Downing on. Very much appreciate him coming on. And that's what I like about, you know, our Republican officials in the state. I mean, I've had the Attorney General Austin Knutson here in studio. He'll take any call. He'll answer any question. I've had Governor Gianforte in here. Same thing. Senator Dayne, same thing. I've had Ryan Zinke in studio here. Got the pictures to prove it. They all come on and take these questions from anybody. And we read the messages as well. And so very, very cool and very glad to get that update from Congressman Downing's office. Way done with the week with me filling in. Thank you to all the listeners out there. Thank you so much to everybody that sent in a message. Means a lot to me to get those messages. Helps us do the show, helps us know what you guys are thinking about and talking about there. I'll be live again tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. Don't miss it. Tomorrow, another live edition, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint. Local.